You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 108 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Oh.
We should say welcome back, Jay.
Well, thank you. Yep.
You had a week off last week.
Yeah, it's that thing that you have to do to keep your hobby going. That's work, that was it.
That's always rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we've got you back on this week's show, and talking about this week's show, we're going to be delving into this last Saturday's Warhammer preview, which was a bit of a specialist-themed studio preview, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Lots of cool stuff.
So we're going to delve into that in a short while. Seeing as Halloween is only around the corner, we're also going to be talking about our top three spookiest models on this week's show as well. And we will be reading out some of your choices towards the end of the podcast. We also have a plethora of news, as is always the way. But before we delve into all of that, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. So, Jay, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, actually, for hobby. So I have been building Space Marines of various flavours, Apothecaries, Terminators. I have been putting more paint on the Luminef. So I've been working on my Avalanor, the Stoneheart King. So I've been working on him for a few weeks now. But I'm just taking my time with the Luminef because they're such nice models. I want to do them justice if I can. So yeah. I've sort of got his, like, the crystallized rock on his, like, mounted on his back done. I've got his shoulders done now. His face is done. And some of the detail, like the tassels and gems and things, towards, unlike his upper torso, I've been done. So my next step now, which I'll carry on tomorrow, is to start doing all of the different panels. So his chest, his arms, and his legs. So I think, I mean, looking at the model, I think I'm almost there with it now. The hard work's been done. So all the fur's been picked out as well. So I should say all the legs and arms and hands and things. So, and the mallets as well, his weapons, I've done them. So it is basically just the armor panels now on his body and legs and arms, which it isn't too tricky to paint. It's just, it's quite time consuming because you've got to edge all of the, like, gold rims and things like this. But I've really enjoyed painting him. And I mean, he's in my 1,000 point list with Alfarion. I think what I'm going to paint next is the Cenari Cathler. So that's my heroes done then for my 1,000 points. And then it's just a case of painting the Venari elements that I've got in the army, which I'll do sort of like in a batch, I think. But I'm really enjoying painting the characters at the moment. And then on top of that, I've also picked up the non-Warhammer new version of the Infinity Rule. So N4 Infinity had just come out recently. So we've just picked up that, me and my brother, and we're just digging out all our old Infinity models. We're going to give that a go in the next couple of weeks, I think, the new rule set.
Ace, that sounds really cool. I have had another fairly quietish week on the Warhammer front. I really need to get some more hobby time in. But I have managed to pick up a paintbrush and finish, aside from the base, my Liege Cavalos for the Osteoc Bone Reapers. He'd been sat almost finished for a while now, so I finished him off. Really happy with how he looks. I really want to get those Bone Reapers done. And also, I'm really on the, as we kind of eagerly anticipate in the release of the Death Watch Codex, I really want to build and paint some Death Watch. So I have painted a Death Watch kind of smash captain, so an old school watch captain with jump pack and thunder hammer and shield. He was really fun to paint, but I really wish I was painting Primaris. I have started doing some Vanguard veterans as well with jump packs, but I think I'll be, you know, I'd enjoy painting Primaris more than Firstborn, I think.
My Blood Angels are going to be, I have a feeling the Firstborn are going to be the stronger units to take for Blood Angels with the jump pack and the Death Company and things like that. But I'm going to convert them from Primaris because stat line wise now, there's not really any difference between a Primaris Marine and a Firstborn Marine. I think it's just the extra attack that a Primaris gets. So, you know, you feel too bad about using Primaris scale Marines. And I think for a kill team, I made a Death Watch kill team once, and I used the Primaris Marines with Death Watch shoulder pads and things like that, and just used them as regular Death Watch.
Yeah, it's more so I haven't got the models. Once I've picked up some Primaris, I'll be building them as Primaris Death Watch. So I'm just waiting on payday to pick up some intercessors or something so I can start a kill team going. So that's my plan for those. And that's about it, really. I've not really built or painted anything else this week. Matt, what have you been up to?
I've been up to quite a bit. So I have painted something awesome, but the Death Watch would be sent round if I told you, unfortunately. What I can tell you about, though, I've built the Silent King. Oh, that was a frustrating model to build. It looks absolutely awesome, but it took days. I can churn out models pretty quickly, but this thing, it must have taken me 3 days to build it. The Silent King himself was a load of pieces, individual legs, individual arms. So fiddly to build, but it looks really good. And I also built the personalities of Bree because, you know, I need Bill the Pony in my life.
Yeah, he's a fantastic miniature, that one.
Yeah, so really, really nice models. I want to try and get the Silent King base coated and my Doomstalkers base coated so I can start painting them up before the next shiny thing comes along.
Yeah, I love the throne of the Silent King when you were sending us pictures. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's really clever how they've done the kit as well. It's the kit's got three sprues, but two of them are identical, and because the throne's symmetrical, it can use the same parts to build either side of it.
Yeah, that is cool.
He's got a pretty big cape, hasn't he?
He's got a really big cape. He's a bit Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat going on, I think.
They can be a bit of a liability in combat, just saying.
Massive capes, yeah. his cape is the flayed skin of a Catan.
Oh, lovely.
Because, you know, that seems like a sensible thing to do.
Is it the one that he's got tormented above him in the little...
It must be, yeah. There's not much of him left.
Nice. Quite a bit of good hobby there. That brings us to the end of the first segment of the podcast. We do have a new preview to talk about and our top three later on, but we're going to take a pause first and come back with the news. What do we have in this week's news, Matt?
We have got a load of stuff up for pre-order. Again, with a very kind of specialist leaning to it, I guess. We've got the new Warcry Catacombs, the new core box for Warcry. This has the same core rulebook that was in the original Warcry set, but you also get the Catacombs rulebook in here that lets you play games in, I suppose, dungeon environments. And you also get the two Ace new warbands and a load of scenery and stuff. That is £125, which seems a little bit steep compared to the original series, personally. Considering the first Warcry came with all the different beasts and a lot more scenery, where this seems more kind of like board gamey, I guess. It looks really cool, don't get me wrong. But I think it's a bit of a jump in the price, as we've seen from a couple of things over the last few weeks, haven't we?
We have. A bit of a price creep.
Yeah, so we've also got a pack of different boards as well, so you can play in different dungeon environments. That's £32.50. Then there's four sets of miniatures to create warbands for different races. So there's Skaven at £36, Caradhran Overlords at £40, Flesh Eater Courts at £36, and Iron Jaws at £36. So I do like this. It gives you options to use your different Age of Sigmar warbands for Warcry. Again, personally, I'd still prefer those bespoke kind of gangs that we saw in the original wave, just because they can do some really cool stuff with the miniatures then, can't they?
They can.
Underworlds, where you get alternative sculpts for Underworlds, do the same for Warcry.
Yeah, even like the initial gangs that we've seen were at something completely new.
You never know. They may come back round. This may just be like a filler to, you know, to just get you by until they get a chance to release a new Stormcast warband or something like that, perhaps.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. And there's a case coming out for £35 as well, if you want a case to put your warbands into. For Necromunda, they have got House of Iron, which is the, I suppose, the Necromunda equivalent of a codex for the Orlocks. So this will follow the same pattern as the other House of Books, where it will include a load of lore about them, and then all the rules that you need to play that specific gang, including bounty hunters, hangers-on, all that cool stuff. The other books have contained some spin-off content for other gangs as well, such as the Slaver's Guild and the Slave Ogrins and stuff. So hopefully there's some cool stuff like that in House of Iron as well. Along with this, we've got dice for £10 and tactics cards for £9.50. If you want the gang tactics cards, I'd recommend ordering them straight away because they tend to go out of stock and then they're like gold dust, aren't they? Those kind of things.
Yeah.
We've got a new plastic set for them, the Masters and the Wreckers. So these are the new miniatures for the Orlocks. They look really cool. You've got kind of jetpack guys, guys with big hammers, and then robotic dogs, because, you know, what else do you need in your life? And then finally, we've got the awesome new Gang Stronghold set. So this is a new set that's compatible with the current Zone Mortalis range, and this lets you create a kind of hideout for your guys. So if you play any scenarios when you're trying to raid somebody else's stronghold, you'll be able to set up the scenery appropriately, which is pretty cool. Yeah. It was in Gork and Walker, that was always one of my favourite things, when you got the scenario where you're doing a hit on another gang's base. And obviously then you had the cardboard scenery to represent it. You could do it with the Zone Mortalis stuff, but, you know, a proper fortification with towers and doors and stuff is a lot cooler to fight over. Absolutely. And that is £55, which I don't think is too bad.
Well, that's not bad at all.
No, it's pretty reasonable. For Adeptus Titanicus, we have got Crucible of Retribution, I think it's called. This is the latest source book for Adeptus Titanicus, which contains the rules for Legio Ignatum, the Fire Wasps. Finally, Legio Ignatum will walk a week on Saturday when I finally have it in my hands. Yeah, really looking forward to this one, because Ignatum are where it's at, basically.
Are there any other Legios in the book?
They normally have a couple in them. That's just the one that they've called out. Right. Normally, Warcom tend to have a bit more info about the supplement during the week, don't they? So I'm sure there will be other Legios represented. There can't be many left, really, that they haven't covered. I think Ignatum's one of the last ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that, hopefully that means after this kind of wave, we're then going into, like, Demon Engine territory.
Or Xenos.
I think we'll see the Demon Titans for the Siege of Terror first before they go Xenos ways. Because I imagine there will be a Siege of Terror book where you get all the funky Demon Titans, which would be cool. And then, yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether they go Orcs for War of the Beast, maybe. Or maybe get some Eldar Titans in as well, because I know you'd be all over that, wouldn't you?
I'd love some Phantoms, Warlock Phantom Titans, yep.
And then to support this, there's something really cool that I absolutely need to order on Saturday. Open Engine War Cards. Like the Open War Cards in 40K, these let you generate a mission and scenario and stuff just using random cards to make some quick pick-up games of Titanicus.
Cool.
It sounds really, really fun. Independent stores will be taking pre-orders for the Warhammer Day Terminator Chaplain. He is available on Halloween, but I think, yeah, the stores are taking pre-orders for him from Saturday. He is £21, which, again, doesn't seem so bad for a Space Marine plastic box, does it?
No.
And again, it's a really, really nice model as well. And then from Forge World on Friday, we have got the Deathwing Companions. Now, these look absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, these are absolutely stunning miniatures. Absolutely stunning.
I really want to paint some up. I suggested to you, Jay, you might be able to use them as Blade Guard veterans, but I suppose they are kind of power armored, aren't they? So they might be a little bit small.
Yeah, that's the only problem. Yeah, they may be a little bit small. I mean, you can use them as like veterans in a Dark Angels army, I suppose. They are very, very nice models. And like, I mean, the more recent Forge World stuff, it's much crisper, isn't it? It looks more sharper, the details do. So these are really nice. I mean, you could probably make use of the helmets and the shields on your Blade Guard veterans to sort of customize them a little bit into Dark Angels Blade Guard veterans.
But yeah, they look absolutely gorgeous, and they're up for pre-order this Friday. In other news, guess what, guys? Warhammer World is open again. Hooray!
Whee!
Now, there are some conditions considering the current climate that we're in. It is advanced bookings only. So if you want to go into the exhibition hall, you need to phone Warhammer World, reserve a slot for you to go around the museum and get your ticket in advance. You can book tables, but it's only for two people from the same household. Likewise, if you do want to go around the museum, it's groups of no more than six, all from the same household or support bubble as well. So unfortunately, at the minute, we won't be able to go together, but if you wanted to go by yourself, you can. And Bugman's will not, unless you've got a reservation. So essentially it's meals only in Bugman's with a reserve slot.
Fair enough.
So they've said if you want to, you know, it might be recommended to bring some drinks with you if you are having a game, because it can get quite hot in that hall, can't it? So stay hydrated. This is really cool. It's it's been closed a long time now, hasn't it? And I'm tempted next time I've got a day off, I might pop up to Warhammer World and have a nosy around the museum, because it seems like an age since we last went there. I think, Dave, it was probably the New Year open day.
I think it was, because I think I joked that, you know, I finally passed my driving at the end of January, and I was like, oh, I'll have to drive us to Warhammer World next, and then it closed.
Yeah.
I still haven't made that drive up to Nottingham yet, which I definitely have to do at some point.
Yeah, maybe you could you could treat Leanne for a trip to Warhammer World.
I am absolutely certain that she would love that. But yeah, I'm sure I'll get to drive up there soon enough. It's an amazing place. It's so good to see it open again.
Yeah, so it's and the severe restrictions are obviously due to which tier it's in. So if Nottingham does drop down, I imagine they might open that up a little bit as well. So
yeah,
that'd be cool. One thing to note as well, they've replaced all the Realm of Battle boards with, it looks like, just normal mats. I suppose that's easier to clean, isn't it? They can just wipe them down.
It is, yeah. Yeah,
it's a shame, because one of the selling points of going to Warhammer World was playing on those intricate, massive show boards. At the minute, I think it's just going to be normal mat.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good, and obviously you've got the Forge World store there as well, and most of the direct order range is normally available in the store as well. So yeah, definitely worth a trip if you're a Warhammer fan. In other news, obviously the Sons of Bayer mats are out now, stomping around the battlefields, and the Bone Grinder from Forge World now has a Sons of Bayer mat battle scroll.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it's 500 points.
Oof.
Putting it a little bit more expensive than the other Mega Gargant. It's got 35 wounds, 4 plus save, same as them. 7 attacks, 3 damage each, so it's got some reliable damage output, but it doesn't have the mortal wounds on a charge, it doesn't have like anything like stuff him in me back. It's, yeah, I don't see anyone taking this over one of the other Mega Gargants, which is a shame. That's something we saw with the Forge World Keeper of Secrets, was always the go-to Keeper of Secrets, and then they brought out the new Battle Tome, and the Forge World one wasn't as good rules-wise, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I think a lot of it with the Forge World model sometimes is the synergy with the rest of the book. Is there not much of that with the Bone Grinder?
Well, yeah, it's got the Sons of Bayer keyword.
Yeah.
So you can take it in an army. It just doesn't have all the cool abilities that the normal ones do.
Because I know, like, the Rogue Idol for the Big War, the Auric War Clans, you know, he's got a pretty good war scroll, but really what makes him tick is all the synergies with the book. You know, like, you can teleport him, crazy stuff like that, which just makes him amazing. You know, you can throw mighty destroyers on him, have him fight in the movement phase and stuff. So, yeah. But yeah, it's a shame that, because it's a really cool model, that Bone Grinder Giant.
Yeah, so I don't think you take it in a Sons of Bayonet army. However, Dave, I think he would potentially take it in an Uruk-based army.
Well,
because you can take it as a mercenary.
Oh, that's cool.
And taken as a mercenary in any destruction faction, he gets an additional rule, the Mega Club of Gork.
Ha!
Which is revered by the Uruks because he can flatten entire enemy platoons. Basically, it gives him a 12-inch bubble, adding one to the bravery of friendly Uruks while he's in your army.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So I think it was always designed as an Uruk giant anyway. So, yeah, I think he'll fit more to them. Probably won't take one in my own army. I do really like the model, though, so it might get added to the collection at some point. And, yeah, we had some news about the upcoming codexes, because it's been a pretty rapid-fire release schedule. I don't know about you guys, but my wallet's certainly been crying the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And they've outlined the roadmap for the codex releases. Now, I think we thought we might be getting these a little bit sooner. Now, whether with shifts in schedule and stuff, they've just been moved out a little bit, maybe. Either way, they've kind of nailed down when the books are coming out. So we have got two codexes coming out a month. In November, we've got Space Wolves and Death Watch. In December, we've got Death Guard and Blood Angels. And then in January, we've got two mystery codexes. Now, I say two mystery codexes. They did mention, I'm sure they mentioned on the live stream a while ago, that January was going to be Dark Angels.
I think they said Dark Angels are going to be really early next year, which would kind of insinuate that it'd be January.
And yeah. They said it was one of the first Xenos Codex of 2021 as well in January.
Yeah, so there was definitely a Xenos Codex. Now, if Dark Angels aren't in that January slot, I know what might be. Because way back in the midst of time, do you remember we saw a shipping invoice for a Custodes version 2?
The Talons, yeah. Oh, so interesting, yeah.
That could be the other January Codex, maybe.
Possibly, yeah, you're right, yeah.
And then they've said, if those six books aren't your army, don't worry because you won't have long to wait. I've got a feeling they'll be churning out two codexes every month to try and get everybody up to date and not do what they've done for previous editions and leave some armies waiting a long time for their codex.
The sooner they get everyone up to date, the sooner they can start bringing out fresh stuff, you know. Yeah. So it's in their best interest in it to get it all out early.
Yeah, so I don't think it'll be long until these are all released. But yeah, exciting stuff. The Xenos one's a bit of a question mark because the big question is this an existing Xenos race or is this something new? There's been a few rumours online about in the core rulebook, you can see some pictures of a fungoid race with a big walking mushroom festooned with guns. So there's rumours and
Doomspike gets for 40k.
Pretty much, yeah. Giant death mushroom sounds like an army to go for. It, of course, as ever, take it with a pinch of salt. It might be complete bobbins, but yeah, there are certainly rumours that it's a new Xenos race coming in January.
Yeah, see, I'm in two minds because I wonder whether they would want to just get all of the current stuff out. You know, right? You know, if you're a Tau player or an Craft World Eldar player, and you see brand new, I mean, you'd probably be happy to see a new Xenos race, to be fair. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, January, yeah, they tend to release new stuff in January, don't they? Gloomspike Gits themselves came out in January.
We do. We tend to get a new army release in January because people have got Christmas pennies to spend and a new army is the best way to spend that. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, even if it's just Eldar, we imagine are going to be early on in the release schedule. Harlequins.
They didn't get their Psychic Awakening, did they? Them and the Death Watch, so...
Yeah, Gene Steeler Court probably got off worst with the points adjustments, so they maybe need a bit of a revision. So, yeah, lots of different armies it could be. We'll find out in January, I guess.
Exciting times. I'm really looking forward to the Death Watch, and especially for the Death Guard book.
Man, yeah, you've got month after month of awesome releases, haven't you?
I know. It's so cool. Excellent stuff. There is some other news that we need to speak about, which we're going to move on to next. I tell you what, we might have been in lockdown, but we've been treated to some awesome Warhammer online previews over the past few months. And we've had another one last Saturday. This one focused primarily on specialist games. So, we've had an awful lot of 40K recently and a few Age of Sigmar dotted about. But it was nice to see that the specialist games get a look in. And there were some really good treats on offer. So I think we're going to go through those now.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kicked off in style with Blood Bowl Second Season Edition. So we actually heard about this a long time ago, didn't we? I can't remember when we put the post on the website.
Yeah.
When Cyanide accidentally slipped details of it when they were announcing Blood Bowl 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a brand new edition of Blood Bowl, and it looks like it's the biggest revision of the rules since it came out. Because, mm-hmm. you know, Blood Bowl, I think it came out originally in the 80s, and there's been a few tweaks here or there, but I think they've tried not to tamper with the DNA of it too much.
No.
Where this is a full new edition where they've added there's a throwing stat now.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is then different to your agility stat. So that means they can make a distinction between those kind of teams. One example that they had is that Skaven are super fast and sneaky and should be able to dodge around, but can they really lob the ball halfway across the pitch? Well, they shouldn't really because they're scrawny rats. So
yeah.
I think that in itself be quite a good balancing mechanic because traditionally those high agility teams tend to dominate in Blood Bowl, don't they?
They do.
Well, it's like you say, the agility stat is used for so many actions. So yeah, by spreading it out a bit, you can have a high agility team with low throwing ability. It just gives you more of a, like, more granularity, doesn't it?
More of a gradient for your teams, which is cool. And yeah, they've pulled out all the stops for this new edition by the look of things. So full hardback rulebook, which includes every single team that is currently available, which is ace. You get obviously the dugouts, the tokens. thankfully, it looks like they haven't messed around with the tokens and the pitch size, because that could have been another concern in the new edition. So that's all as it was.
Everything's compatible, yeah.
Everything's compatible, which is really good. What is different in this set, though, is you get two full teams, and that includes your star players, your big guys. Because normally you just get a very basic kind of team, don't you? And
yeah,
in most leagues, you'd probably have to change around or add a few things to make them, you know, half decent.
Mm-hmm.
But now, yeah, you get star players, you get the big guys, and some absolutely jaw-dropping models. These are probably two of the prettiest teams they've done, aren't they?
I like the way you say prettiest when one of them's orcs.
Well, they're pretty orcs. I mean, they're not quite fabulous feathers in the hair Empire guys.
They love their feathers, don't they? These the Bogenhafen Barons.
The Bogenhafen Barons, led by Griff Orbevold. Yeah, and they've got an ogre, which is cool. And then, yeah, they were up against the Thunder Valley Greenskins, a amazing looking Black Orc team, which includes a troll. So, yeah, what do we think of these guys compared to the... I think it was 2016, the last edition of Blood Bowl came out.
Yeah, I think the models are... I mean, we've seen the Blood Bowl teams over the Season 1 improve, haven't we? You know, more recently, the Seraphon and the Snotlings. Like, the Snotling Pump Wagon's amazing.
The who? The Seraphon? They don't play Blood Bowl, Dave.
The Lizardmen do.
No, the Lizardmen, sorry. You know what I meant. getting confused between these races. Both of these teams look awesome. And I really like the fact that they include a star player each as well in plastic. That's amazing.
I think when Blood Bowl came out, I don't think they were expecting it to be as popular as it has been, which is madness. I think Specialist Games, if you don't know, sits under Forge World. And I think they have like a limited sprue budget that they'll split between all their products. Obviously, it's a big investment making a plastic mold. So I think the plan was we'll make the two core teams in the starter box, and then everything else will be resin, where it's all like hotcakes. And then, oh, actually, yeah, we can invest in the plastic molds then. And, rather than having to have, you know, two identical sprues, have been able to mix up a bit and, yeah, put a lot more of investment into it, which is really, really cool to see. Even down to the fact this box has got plastic referees in it.
You were saying about the teams. How cool are these guys, especially the dwarf?
The dwarf with the book of grudges on his back. I can just picture him writing down the names of everyone he sent off in there.
All the elves he sent off.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you know, it's really they're random models to include in the box because they don't currently have any kind of like gameplay elements.
No.
But something that was always cool about Blood Bowl was the referees and the random stuff. You know, I have pictures of this escalating into some kind of Subutio-style stadium with all your kind of crowd watching and stuff, which would be amazing.
It's really cool. Like, when we first started playing Blood Bowl, because I never played it originally, I struggled with the rules. And just so I was kind of getting into it, we had a bit of a Blood Bowl league going on, actually, before lockdown, didn't we?
Lockdown scuppered that without two games into the league,
it did. But I was really enjoying it. I just managed to score a touchdown with my ogres for the first time, which was an achievement in itself. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this new edition.
Alongside the box, they've also got the Necromantic team coming out, which I absolutely love for the zombies and the kind of jack-o'-lantern-headed scarecrow. So cool. And ghosts, like proper spooky ghosts, which is just like a kind of blanket over somebody. I think they are out with a new Spike magazine alongside the box as well. So yeah, really, really looking forward to playing some Blood Bowl. I hope that we're able to play it by the time this is released, because I would be all in on a Blood Bowl league. Mm-hmm. And I reckon that'd be pretty easy to stream as well, guys.
Yeah, I think it would. Yep.
So, yeah. So, I mean, so that's Blood Bowl. It didn't stop there. They went into Warcry. So, I think for Warcry, I was expecting to see some more warbands. What we got was a little bit different. It is four battle tomes, one for each Grand Alliance, that essentially lets you make your own warband using whatever faction from Age of Sigmar. Now that's pretty cool. So you know, you can take the Lumineth for Warcry, you'd be able to take the, you know, the Ogres for Warcry. I think I am a little bit disappointed it wasn't more bespoke teams though.
Yeah, I wonder if they're just not ready yet. I mean, they've got to be doing more, haven't they?
I'd have thought now. I don't know how well Warcry is done. Obviously, by releasing these books, it means that the entire Age of Sigmar range can be used for it, which is cool. That's very much the angle that Kill Team took, who kind of dabbled in the whole kind of bespoke faction thing, but didn't really kind of go full out with it.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe people don't like those individual kind of warbands that you can only use for that game and would rather use their Age of Sigmar collection. You could certainly convert up some amazing looking Warcry gangs using them. And I suppose for dipping your toe into an army, being able to pick up a box of Lumineth and convert up a warband without having to commit to a full army is quite a cool like outlet creatively, isn't it?
And what is cool about Warcry as well, if you compare it to the likes of Kill Team, I'm not saying, because I know that there are a lot of fans of Kill Team. But the problem with Kill Team is it was just a small scale 40k. Like, the rules weren't all that massively different. I mean, you had like your tech trees and stuff for your guys, but the actual core mechanics are very similar to 40k. Warcry, I mean, we obviously played a few games, Jay, and the mechanics are completely different than Age of Sigmar, where you're like rolling dice at the beginning of your turn and then you're assigning them to abilities and things, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you're gambling for like doubles, triples, and quads, aren't you? And then that affects your priority. I mean, yeah, it's like almost like locking in your dice. So your dice rolls are a resource that you spend in advance rather than rolling during the fight. But then you've got the free, so like, you know, like Silver Tower or Warhammer Quest, Blackstone, but then you've got more freedom in your movement. You can move up and down. So it's almost like a cross between like Necromunda, Silver Tower, and Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, which is cool. So, I mean, I do think it's a good idea being able to use all the different armies, because I know there's a lot of feedback about the card packs, which is like certain models from certain factions that you could use, but you were a little bit restricted, really, weren't you?
You were.
Being able to put together your gang from various different miniatures within that range, I think that's pretty cool. You know, if you could do an order faction, like even a Cities of Sigmar, led by a guy in a Griff Charger and convert up, you know, like we say, those Blood Bowl miniatures, you could convert up an awesome Warcry team using them.
Yeah, you could.
I might even do that. That sounds like a really good idea. what are your thoughts on these books?
I think they're a good thing, because I think it is good, because it just allows everyone to join in with whatever models they've got currently. But I'm like you. I hope that this is just almost like, remember the indexes for Warhammer 8th edition. This is just you can use these to play with the models you got, but you know, we'll be bringing out some Fire Slayer themed warbands and, you know, Idenef themed warbands with new models. Because if you look at like Warhammer Underworlds, where they add new, you know, every model in Warhammer Underworlds is new. And then you can add them to your Age of Sigmar armies, and it also lets them experiment with new themes and models and things, because they only need to create like 10 or so of these individual. I mean, look at the Dark Elves we're getting. The all brand new Dark Elf kits there. So,
It's almost like the Kernothian Underworld, being able to do stuff like that. You don't have to create a whole range for a battle tome, just a random kit, but it looks really cool. I hope so. But yeah, I think I'll be picking up these books, because I think that'd be a nice little project to convert up some Warcry warbands. So yeah, the next one though was a big reveal that we knew was coming, but we'd been dying to see the models. Warhammer Underworld's Dire Chasm.
I think this was the big one, wasn't it, from the show?
Yeah, it was. This is what, season 4 of Underworlds? We've got through a few years of this now, and it is, if you don't know, it's like the strange love child of a card game and a miniatures game, isn't it?
It's brilliant, yeah. Really, really good game.
There's a deck building mechanic, there's these quick punchy games, and some absolutely gorgeous miniatures. And Dire Chasm did not disappoint with the two new warbands, Maiari's Purifiers and the Dread Pageant. So, as resident Lumineth expert, Jay, what were your thoughts on the Lumineth warband?
Oh, really, really happy with these. So two of the models in there, we've got the Alarif Stone Guard and the Venari Sentinel. They're pretty similar to the models we've already got for the Luminef main range, although that Alarif Stone Guard could be a really cool champion in your unit, sort of standing on the rock holding his two-handed hammer.
Yeah.
Really nice. But then the stars of the warband have got to be the new mage and, more importantly for me, the new Swordmaster.
Swordmaster. It's so cool. It is a proper Swordmaster as well, isn't it? Obviously with a luminous vibe.
Yeah, it's got nods to the old Swordmasters. So you've got like a representation of the Tower of Hoif on the back banner. This is one of the river. So you've got in the Luminef books, you've got factions that are aligned to the different elements that the Luminef sort of like worship and meditate with. So you've got in the main army book that we've seen so far, the Battle Tome, you've got the stone, the mountain spirit, the mountain elemental. So you have a mage, the stone guard, and the mountain spirits themselves. And then hinted in the book are the different elementals, so the river elementals, the wind elementals, and the zenith elemental. So this is obviously one of the warrior monks of the river. I'm really excited. You know, this is just a taste, really, of what we're going to see ultimately with the when they expand the Luminef range. Very cool. Be interesting to see how she differs from the Alarif Stoneguard, because they both look like they're melee-focused. And what do they do differently? And then the mage as well. It's always good to have another option for a mage in your Luminef army of mages.
He's not a happy chappy, though, is he? He's having a really bad day.
Yeah, I wonder how long he's had to hold that pose for, I guess.
It is a really uncomfortable-looking pose.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. He looks like he's doing some sort of yoga position there. But a lot of the elves, like the stone mage, is sort of meditating on the floating rocks. And now this one as well, also pulling a similar pose. What I couldn't tell from this guy, though, is what elemental faction he's aligned to, or whether he's aligned to any elemental faction. I couldn't make out any of the runes on there that might signify which elemental faction he belongs to. So he could be a new kind of sort of generic caster, or one that's sort of like studying all the different elementals. Also, I know Dave likes the little owl he's holding as well.
I was waiting for my point to jump in and say, surely the model of this warband is the owl.
Owl of the year 2020, do we think?
Yeah, definitely.
That should be a top three owls in Warhammer. Yeah, he's really cool. I really like him. But he's nothing compared to the Slaaneshi warband, let's face it. These guys are all levels of wrong, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's Slaanesh, isn't it?
Well, that's it. You know, the Slaanesh has gone through a few phases, hasn't it? From the, you know, overly sexualized demonettes, the metal release that they did, to just downright weird and creepy in this kind of stuff. There's like a sinister undertone to them. And some MC Hammer style baggy trousers as well. Which obviously all the cool kids are wearing.
I love the sort of Persian theme to them. They look really smart.
Yeah, I love the look. There's one with like a pole arm, it just with a little kind of tassel on the end of it. It looks so, so cool. And then you've got the archer, which the weird masks with a bit of a veil underneath them as well. It's just so weird. You know, this guy's got his glove kind of like stapled to his arm because that seems perfectly normal. The warband leader, who looks like something out of a horrific version of the Rocky Horror Pictures Show, has got his cape kind of like bolted to his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, through his wrist.
Wrong. Just wrong. He's got a really cool shield, though.
Oh, yeah, he has got a very cool shield.
Shield looks alive.
Yeah, it's you wouldn't want to mess with these guys. But I think the real star of the entire box for me is the absolutely horrific looking Beastman.
Yeah.
It's weird.
He's got a demonette claw going on there.
He's got a demonette claw. He's got like one thigh high boot. Yeah, this guy is, and a corset. Yeah, that's not a Beastman you want to bump into down the street, is it?
No, absolutely not. Wicked cool sword as well.
Yeah, so yeah, I hope. Now, obviously, we know that Slaanesh are getting some love in the near future in the Marathi book. I hope this is a nod towards a Slaaneshi Mortals range, because I would absolutely be all over an army with that look. because they're just wrong. They're just wrong on every level.
Yeah, but both fantastic warbands. I mean, what I also am quite excited about is they're mentioning primacy and hunger mechanics that are going to be included in the next season of Warband. Because they always add something new, don't they, every season?
Yeah, new mechanics to tee off, and obviously you have new cards then interacting with that, which is really how you keep the collectible card thing going, because obviously newer cards are going to interact with this new mechanic, but older ones might not do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so far with Underworlds, they've not added stuff to the detriment of previous sets, have they?
No, they haven't.
You
know,
you can still use existing warbands. You might want to pick up some new generic cards for some of the new mechanics, but I think they've managed to keep things pretty well balanced across all the warbands, haven't they?
They have. The only thing they've had to do, and they do have to do these in these card-based stuff, is the really early ones. A lot of the generic cards that came in the starter boxes have been phased out, but they've kind of then been replaced with the generic cards in the newer sets.
Reprints, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, they want every Underworlds player to buy that core box, don't they?
They do.
And let's face it, I mean, how much are these boxes? £30-40 tops? The gorgeous miniatures alone, that's worth it. Plus you get all the stuff to play the game. Yeah. So I think they said this is out December, didn't they?
They did.
So, this will definitely be going on the Christmas list because I want to paint up all these models. I've not painted up any Lumineth, so it might be nice to paint up the guys out of this box just for a bit of variety.
Yeah.
Because that Swordmaster, I'm going to have to do in a classic red High Elf scheme, I think.
Nice.
So, yeah. So then we got a bit of a commercial break in the form of a bit of a sizzle reel for... Warhammer Storyforge.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't seen much of this for a while now, have we? It all gone quiet on the Storyforge front, but it looks like they're working on lots of new different shows, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think Angels of Death, we saw a couple of previews ago, they showed us like quite a big clip from that.
Yeah.
So that was it.
So, yeah, we saw some Eldar, Jay.
Yeah, this was like a cartoon, wasn't it? Animation. We just got a glimpse of some striking scorpions leaping across the battlefield.
Really cool animation, didn't it?
Yeah, and was it Adam Troke was saying that it's one of the best stories ever told in any format? This Eldar animation, so 10 minutes long or something he said, but it sounds like it's going to be amazing. he was really impressed with the story, so.
I'm quite excited about this because if they can do, you know, one-off episodes like that, that may be 10 minutes long. But I think the million-dollar question is how is all this stuff going to get published? Is it going to be exclusive to Warhammer community, presumably with some kind of subscription fee to access it, or is it going to be on other subscription services, so Netflix, Amazon Prime? I think I prefer it to be on one of those other ones rather than locked to Warcom myself, just because I think it would be a bit of a stretch for people to, I don't know what the price and structure would be, but do you know what I mean? I think it'd be a bit of an ask to subscribe just to get these Warhammer TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably right, Matt. I think they might be edging more towards their own platform, and maybe that's what's taking the time for us to get a release of this, because they're obviously still working on the platform of how it's going to be released. I mean, I don't know much about the structure of getting stuff on Netflix, but at the end of the day, Games Workshop are a company that they want to make money back on these. They've obviously spent a lot of money on Storyforge, so maybe I don't know what they get back through Netflix or something like Amazon Prime. I did notice somebody commented the other day to say that, you know, they're working quite closely with Marvel at the moment, so could we see it on Disney Plus? Mm. That's probably a good shout. But again, I've got a feeling that you're right, Matt. I think they might be looking at their own platform, their own subscription platform.
Now, if it was a reasonable subscription, I think loads of people would jump on it. If we're pushing towards the, you know, £7 a month Netflix fee, and like you say, maybe that's why there's been a bit of a quiet period, because they'll need to get all that content up. You know, if they've got loads and loads of different shows, then yeah, I'd subscribe and watch them all It's I think that is the question mark. And I think at this minute, I don't think they really know either what the plan is.
No.
So it's exciting. I can't wait to watch some of it because I imagine as a kid being told that at some point in your life you'll be able to watch Warhammer cartoons and animations and even live action stuff.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, and then we had just one other little tease as part of the preview. We didn't get a lot of details, but we do know Kill Team is in some form coming to the Pariah Nexus. We got a tiny, tiny little teaser with a dead Space Marine and a flayed one.
Mm.
And that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't see any models. Nothing.
It's an interesting one because we've mentioned before about Kill Team basically being like a mini version of 40K, which you've kind of got now baked into the core rules.
Yeah, so the 500-point games of 40K is essentially, you can play a normal game at that points level now, can't you?
Yeah. So maybe they're going to try some different mechanics now. And also I'm very interested to see what the starter box will be, because obviously it looks like it's going to be Space Marines and Necrons. It could be a good way of expanding your forces, actually, depending on what they include.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we've got a flayed one in the trailer. I don't think they'd leave the plastic flayed one release until then, because this is presumably going into next year now.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've done that before, where kits come out quite a long time after the main Codex release.
Well, there's even been where kits haven't come off out at all. Look at these Primaris Suppressors that came out in the Vanguard starter box.
Yeah.
And we've still not got a plastic kit for that yet. And that was, you know, we've got a new Codex now. We've still not got a plastic
kit. I'll go back even further, Jay. Orc Choppers. What are they called? The helicopters. Orc helicopters.
Defcopters.
Defcopters. Would have loved to have seen them get a proper plastic kit.
Yeah, so I honestly don't know. Now, whether they go the more, like you say, Dave, a different game mechanic and go more Warcry and have something that is a different game, essentially, but with little bespoke kill teams, maybe. There wasn't a lot to go on the trailer, unfortunately, on this one.
No. What's also interesting as well is what I did like. I mean, we didn't really play many games of Kill Team. It didn't quite click for us. But I did see the appeal in you leveling up characters and naming them and stuff. But we kind of got that with Crusade now.
You can play Crusade at 25 power and get essentially a better version of what we had for Kill Team previously. Yeah.
But I know I saw a few people commenting on the official like Warhammer social media pages when they sort of previewed this teaser of Kill Team, and there quite clearly is quite a big audience for it. So, you know, it's good that they're bringing it back. It obviously has a fan base. It'd just be very interesting to see how it sits with everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the difference with a 25 power Crusade game, you still need to have an army, essentially, don't you? You need HQ, you need a couple of troop choices, maybe an elite unit. Yeah. Where for Kill Team, you can get away with just a box of miniatures.
Yeah, you don't need units, do you?
So yeah. that I think is the difference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll only be a matter of weeks until we get another teaser and find out exactly.
Seminar.
Another preview seminar. Which would be pretty exciting, but there was some really good stuff in there. I think my sort of highlight, well, it's close actually, because I really like the Blood Bowl stuff.
But
the new Underworlds looks fantastic as well.
Yeah, freaky fetish Beastman, I think, gets my vote.
And on that bombshell, we're going to take a pause and come back with this week's top three. So Halloween is just around the corner. So for this week's top three, we decided to go all spooky and pick our top three spookiest models from the various different Warhammer universes. Matt, would you like to start us off with your third choice?
So my third choice is what looks like the combination of a frog, Predator, and those weird things out of The Last of Us. And that is Bubulus, Tamerkan's Toad Dragon.
Oh.
It's a freaky looking.
I had no idea where that was going.
No, neither did I.
He's a dragon by a real stretch of the word, isn't he?
He is.
He's basically just some big horrific Nurgle beastie with a weird kind of double jointed mouth with big claws and a big sucky tongue that he uses to drink his opponents. Yeah, he's a really horrific looking thing. And it's a shame that you can't buy him anymore because I really, really like the model.
Yeah, it's a really nice model. I'm happy to say that I've fought alongside him quite a lot, and so I've got to see this awesome model quite a bit.
You've got to see this awesome model get killed quite a bit.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So yeah, Bubulus, Tamerkan's Toad Dragon, is my number three choice because he is properly ace.
Cool. I am going to go for something really spooky. I think it's really spooky. And it's coming from Middle-earth.
Ooh.
So, you know, just a little bit out there. I think there's not much scarier than, especially when you read about it in the books, the first sight of the ring wraiths.
Yeah.
They're pretty spooky. And the atmospheric music, they are frightening. You really don't want to meet the ring wraiths. So I think I should get a Halloween costume, actually, of a ring wraith. That's probably quite easy to pull off as well.
That is a pretty easy Halloween costume.
And just screech at everybody. Just a proper high screech.
The models are really nice as well. The mounted versions have been discontinued for a while, but I notice in the Journey of the Ringbearer book, there's a legendary legion that lets you use the nine on horses. So I'd love to see those models come out again, because that'd be a really cool army on the table.
They fleshed out some of the individual characters as well, didn't they, from the Nazgul, like the different men.
The named ones, yeah.
And you've got that really cool, the Witch King on the Fell Beast as well now, from the Battle of Peldna Fields.
Plastic one, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Ringwraiths are my third choice. Jay, what is your third choice?
My third choice is a member of the Gobbapalooza, the Scaremonger.
Scaremonger.
He looks like he's trick-or-treating.
He does literally look like he's trick-or-treating.
So probably not, but not that spooky, but quite thematic.
It'd definitely give you a shock if you bumped into him on a dark night. I love the Gobbapalooza. It's such a good box, isn't it?
It is. It's brilliant. It's like five little characters. I mean, they're not the greatest on the battlefield, but they look so cool.
I've been tempted to do a Squig army at some point. I think I'd have to get those guys in it.
Yeah, definitely. Matt, what is your second choice?
So there's some pretty freaky stuff in the Mortal Realms, but what's freakier than a harp made out of a person? So yeah, my second choice is the Infernal Enrapturous. So graphic. For a long time, they didn't actually show a picture on the box art for the Wrath and Rapture box that came out.
I still don't think there's a 360 of her on Warhammer on the actual web store.
Yeah, that for people who might be a bit queasy or not like stuff like that, don't look at the back of this model. It's horrible. Essentially, all his various tendons and stuff have been stretched out to create the strings of this harp. Really, it surprised me, this model, because it is kind of graphic for a Citadel miniature, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very. This is actually, Matt, I'm going to have to swap around my top and second choice just so I can like mention it now. But this was my top choice because it is just horrifying. It's disgustingly brilliant.
Disgustingly brilliant, yeah. It's, whoever designed this has got some serious problems and probably need to have a bit of sit down and think about it.
Yeah, it's a proper scary model.
In fact, I think we chatted to the guy who designed it and he's like, oh yeah, when he pointed out, oh yeah, the strings are his tendons. All right, okay, awesome. I'll just walk over here now. Cheers.
Right, yeah. He started talking to us just as all security came rushing out of there. It's gone out again.
Awesome. We'll say that's my second choice. Jay, what is your second choice?
Dreadful tales are told around huddled fires of those lost in the killing cold of a mountain winter, driven by famine and pain to hunt their own companions and former friends for their meat and the warmth of their blood. There is no salvation for these damned souls, for the horrors in which they indulge cannot save them, and they become things neither dead nor alive, condemned to an eternity of empty hunger and terrible isolation. It is the Mongol.
The Mongol. Oh.
It's like a sort of ghoul, ghost, zombie hybrid.
Yeah. Yeah, he is terrifying. And that I think you've just won the top three with that little rendition there as well. But yeah, he's a proper scary model.
I remember watching someone use him in a battle once at a Games Workshop store. I think it was in Age of Sigmar, and it just like it just decimated the enemy's army. It was so powerful.
The models, I've got the model, and it's really creepy. It's kind of like disemboweling a horse.
Yeah.
As it's kind of standing there, blood streaked, looking at you. Yeah. Horrible model. It's cool.
I remember playing against one of these at a unicorn tournament, and my evocator's shock horror failed a charge on it and then got charged by it. It didn't go well for my evocators. But yeah, proper scary model that is. We're round to our top choices already. So Matt, what is your top choice?
Well, my top choice is sitting on the Warcry theme is the Unmade.
Oof.
There's something wrong with these guys. They remove their faces and wear it on their belt. I'm no expert, but I don't think that's normal.
I don't think that's how faces are supposed to work.
I don't think so. The lead is kind of like chopped off his legs and replaced him with giant spiky metal struts. Yeah. Don't remove your face, please, people listening. That's not going to end well. And yeah, it's just wrong on so many levels.
Guys have got some serious issues.
Yeah, there's a bit of a slushy vibe going on there as well. I think it's something in the water.
Yeah.
Do you think they applied for a job as like a plastic surgeon in the Mortal Realms and were turned down? So, you know, they just went crazy.
Yeah.
Do you know, when you're doing something and you start getting a bad feeling about something, so you can't go, maybe this isn't the right thing for you. Surely when like the boss comes up and says, right, yeah, just take your face off. Sorry, say that again. Yeah, just take your face off. I don't think this club's for me, actually.
Yeah, you'd have second thoughts about your membership. You'd just hand in your card, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Awesome. My top choice, which is actually my second choice, but never mind. How scary would it be to be faced down by death itself?
Ooh.
My top choice is Reichnor the Grimhailer from the Nighthorn. I had to include a model from the Nighthorn in this top three because they are ghosts. I actually have this model and I've always wanted to paint it, and I really do need to paint it. It's a shame you can't use them in the Bone Reapers.
Stay up late on Halloween and paint it, Dave.
Yeah, maybe I should do that. It's a really cool model. He is practically death himself with a massive scythe. He's got a winged ghostly horse thing, Pegasus. I like how it's positioned with like him over the top of like a statue, and the base is really nice as well. And this was an easy build kit.
I'm just looking at this on the Games Workshop website. It's a really nice model, isn't it?
It's a super nice model. I was really looking forward to buying it. I bought it and then never actually got around to painting it. So definitely need to do that because it's a really nice model.
I mean, he gets some serious goth points as well because, you know, he's got an undead flying Pegasus horse thing and a scythe. How do you goth that up some more? Put some candles on its head.
Yeah. I think he can extinguish them to buff up his magic.
Can he? Really cool. Of course he can.
Yeah. he's a really cool model, and I think I might have to go and dig him out straight after this podcast and paint him. That'd be really cool. Jay, do you want to finish us off with your spookiest model?
So this particular model has been giving me nightmares for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've been having cold sweats at night, waking up, scrambling from a Space Marine Codex. How can I defeat this thing? There must be a way in here somewhere. It is the Nightbringer, of course.
Yeah.
Who is pretty much death himself.
Yeah, well, I was trying to find it before the podcast, and I think it might have been either an Eldar book or something like that, or maybe even one of the early Necron books. But I remember, I'm sure I remember reading some background where the Eldar used to reincarnate, and then they lost that ability when the birth of Slaanesh and all the souls were consumed by Slaanesh. But I'm pretty sure something about the aspect of death and the Nightbringer sort of embedded that on the psyche of the younger races, and that's when they started to fear death. And until that point, they never feared death, but then after that point, they did. And I'm not sure if it was actually the birth of Slaanesh that stopped the Eldar reincarnating, all this fear of death that the Nightbringer sort of instilled in them over generations that limited their ability to reincarnate. Cool background for it.
The Eldari and the Nightbringer probably have some prior as well, since they were both involved in the War in Heaven, weren't they?
Yeah, well, that was it, the War in Heaven. And I'm pretty sure it was Kegarak who tricked the Nightbringer into consuming all of its kin. So the Nightbringer was sort of like feeding on all of the other Sitan or Katana, how you pronounce it.
The best way to kill another Katan is throw a Nightbringer at them.
Yeah, well, this is it. When I, in the middle of the night, when I'm looking for the Space Marine Codex, I just think to myself, maybe I can ally in a Nightbringer. Maybe that's the way to kill a Nightbringer.
Yeah, that model is frightening with those rules. Absolutely frightening. You guys have also picked out some awesome models as well. So we're going to take a pause and come back with the community top three picks. We have come to the final part of this week's podcast, where we read out the community top three picks. We've had one over on Facebook. Dan has picked out his recently painted Mega Gargan, who is painted in an Ulgu, the Realm of Shadows kind of scheme. And it looks awesome.
It looks really cool.
Looks really good. Matt, what have we got over on Twitter?
So Jem tweeted us his top three, Illuminor Zeras. Sucking the soul out of that person is spooky. Yeah, it is. That's a pretty horrific looking miniature as well, because he's like liquidizing the poor guy that's on the floor.
Yeah.
The Black Coach, classically spooky. I love the Black Coach model. I'm not picking one up yet. It's a really nice model.
The new one's brilliant, yeah.
The new one is brilliant, but it's flipping expensive.
It is. It's a bit on the pricey side. And yeah. Lady Alinda, the Stuff of Nightmares, she's a really nice model. A bit fiddly to build. Brief,
isn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, she looks gorgeous. We have got Fabius Fulgrim, who says number three, The Unmade. Number two, The Blood Bowl Pumpkin Scarecrow. Yes, I need to get this team as soon as I can. And The Infernal Enrapturous. Pete Allison says number three, The Unmade. Anybody who wears their face as a belt is classified as creepy to my eyes. Urien Rakarth, cool pink colour, disturbing model. I can't remember what Rakarth is. The Dark Eldar.
He's
the
Hemoculi, yeah.
Has he got, like, he's probably got a coat made of skin and stuff, hasn't he?
No, well, he has a face that comes off as well. He sort of wears a face over his face, yeah.
There's a lot of this going around, isn't there?
It's probably the same guy that did The Unmade, sculpted him.
Probably.
Yeah. I've got another model I need to show you. He has a face, yes, on his belt, in his backpack.
And his number one choice is also Lady Alinda, the Mortaker of Grief. What is under the veil? Yeah, proper creepy model. And he also gives an honourable mention to the classic skeleton. And Nevermore says Curdos Valentian, the Craven King. That's a really nice model as well.
It is.
I'm after this podcast, I'm very tempted to get my Nighthaunt out and have a nosy, see what I've got, because I've got quite a lot of the range.
Yeah, I picked up quite a bit of Nighthaunt when I was doing Legions of Nagash, because you could bring most of them into a Legions of Nagash army. So I had, like, you know, Chain Rasp and had all the contents from Soul Wars. And like I say, I've got Reichnor that I need to paint. I might paint it. Like you say, I might make that a Halloween weekend project. To paint
Reichnor. We should do that. We should do that. Have a bit of a Halloween Nighthaunt off.
Yeah, that'd be ace. Awesome. Thanks for your top three picks, everybody. If you do wish to take part in the top three, we're going to ask you, if you're not replying to our tweets or our Facebook messages, to put in the hashtag Sprues and Brews to make that visible for us. We can check that out. Speaking of which, Matt, what is next week's top three?
So we've got two mystery codexes coming in January. So we've got a simple one this week. We want to know the next three codexes you want to see released.
Awesome. So like I say, you can get them to us by replying to our tweets and Facebook messages when we put them out asking for top threes, or you can get them in early and slap the hashtag Sprues and Brews on there, and we'll hopefully give them a readout next week on the next show. That brings us to the end of another podcast, guys. We're nearing 110 now. The episode 100 is but a distant memory.
Wow, we're flying through these. It still feels like March, though, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it really does. So until then, have a great week of hobbying, and we'll be back again next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. Make sure you check out our social media at Sprues and Brews on Twitter and facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. And of course, you can always head over to the website, spruesandbrews.com, for all the latest Warhammer news.